fuck off, will you? Fresh, yeah?
Get the fuck up!
This is episode 16. We're in Ballymun. Steer wall, brother. Welcome.
Thank you, yeah.
Good awesome. To see you.
It's good to be here.
Glory days. I had to listen to it this morning, Steve. And I also listened to your Tubby interview. Don't know why I laughed before that. But it was coincidental that on the 16th of May, Tubby interviewed you. And on the 26th of May, he said, I'm getting out of here. And about 3 weeks later, he was kicked out.
That's, they call me the Glory Days. They call me the Black Widow of interviews now, so watch our show.
So where
the fuck? Yeah, this could be the end of this fucking podcast.
You took down the fucking OG of fucking The Late Late Show with a bit of honesty. So welcome to Ballymun.
Yeah,
welcome to the Fresh Batch podcast.
It's good to be here. Thanks for having me.
The Glory Days, tell us about that.
It came during the pandemic. I fucking struggled in the pandemic, I have to be honest, because I felt like, you know, that thing of what we were just talking about, being prone to the negativity, it's like, and life kicking the shit out of you. I felt like I was just getting to, you know what I mean? To a level, not even a level, you don't reach anywhere in music, but I was getting to a space where I was like, just a few gigs coming in and I was starting to make a few quid and I was like, this could be something, like, you know what I mean? And then the pandemic hit and I was like, what the fuck is going on? Like, you know? And so I was just left sitting with myself. And so, yeah, for the first, I'd say the first year, a couple of songs came during that time. But for the first year, I fucking struggled with it. Whereas Jesse loved it. She was working from home and didn't have to leave the gaff, didn't have to see anyone. And so, yeah, at the end of the first lockdown, 2021, I went back on the smokes. I hadn't smoked in fucking 7-8 years. And I was sitting out the garage, yeah, in January, blowing smoke, shivering, smoking cigarettes and playing the fucking guitar. And I just wanted to get that word, like all the, you know, the old sayings. I think that's what, well, I don't know if other people do, but I hear it a lot in songs, you know, where people get one-liners from back in the day and they stick them in songs and I always love that. I'm like, oh, you fucker, that's, it's a good one. So Niall Sagosha was one of those.
Niall Sagosha is a good one, isn't it?
Yeah, I just want, because it's as Dublin as it comes.
Yeah.
It's all across the board, no matter where from.
Where are you from still?
Shankill.
Working class to the door, yeah?
Ah, yeah, yeah.
But Shankill to me, like, now I do know it, because I'll tell you, right?
Yeah.
I went out one night, there was a couple of people were trying to set up a youth club out there, and they asked me to go out.
Right.
And I swear to God.
It's a mental cape, yeah. Go on.
What did you say, mental?
I said it's a mental cape, yeah.
I'm glad you said that, but I went out and I was like, these guys are going to have their work cut out. And basically, you will correct me, right, because I wasn't there for long. It looked like the estate, right, was just surrounded by this huge big high wall, and these were absolutely and completely locked in.
Yeah, so it's surrounded by affluence.
Yes.
Do you get what I'm saying? Yeah, so yeah. even when I was in parts, I was like, Shankill, you want a little posh cunt? And I'm like,
people don't understand.
It's like we fucking see Bono and Enya and all them on one side, and then, you know what I mean, Sinead and everyone else, O'Connor, like everyone else that lives around you it's cliny and it's docky and it's parts of fucking Bray and stuff.
Is Rat Salad out there?
Rats, that's where I grew up, yeah.
Is it? Yeah, I know a fella out there, Graymo. Me and him set up a record label in Ballymun, Working Class
right.
Records,
wow.
About 20 years ago.
Wow.
And I didn't realise. And Johnny Moy is from out there as
yeah,
well.
Yeah, that's right. He's
and
from
I didn't realise. Because
yeah.
Johnny Moy is half posh and half rough as fuck.
Yeah, yeah. And so, but that's what I'm saying. The lines are blurred. So even on my road, like we used to call my road Sesame Street, because it's just full of Muppets. And every night, now my family, be like, you know what I mean? Everyone was mental on the gargle and it'd be jolly, and then it crosses into the bewitching and they'd be out in the middle of the field, my uncle dressed as Elvis kicking the bollocks out of someone.
That sounds deadly.
It was fucking
shameless.
Mental. And then yeah, but then you'd have like other Elvins at the top of the road who were so middle class, like, oh my God,
what's going on in there?
So it was just a melting pot of everything. But
so that's mixed tenure. That's like the success story of Dublin. You
yeah,
have two
yeah,
different communities living together.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
No way.
It was the craziest fucking place. It was just...
No disrespect to Bray, right? Because I love Bray. I actually love going out with the young people out to Bray. But one of the uncles rings me the other day. He said to get the job. He's plumbing, you know. And he's you know, just when somebody hits the ground running, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
And the guy he's working with is supportive and all that kind of stuff, right? He says to me, oh, to be in Bray at 7:15, so he gets out there, right? So in his poor innocent head, right, he thought Bray was the bumpers and the, you know, all that stuff.
The free, seafront, yeah,
the seafront, the charging buildings and all that kind of stuff. That was what he texted me. He goes, this place is mental. I was like, what do you mean? He said, the gaffer end. They had to bait a young fella out of the room so that we could fucking get in and fix the fucking boiler, you know? Yeah. And I was like, no way. And he said, I'm shitting. I had that impression of Bray. And then I remember, like, I'm doing community work since I'm 15 or 16. Like, so it was always kind of with different people. And there was a woman came out to us from the White City. Seemingly very badly built houses, right? Built in the 70s or something like that. And she was telling me about it. And I just couldn't get my head around it because I was thinking, Bray is whopper, like, you know? So a few of us went out one time and I was just couldn't believe the poverty that I knew, right, was kind of hidden away. We had Kitty Holland on and she was saying, everybody says that the divide is north-south side in Dublin. It's not. It's east and west. Because all along that train line is basically where a lot of the wealth is. Now, I know you're there as well, and it's not, but there are little pockets of it, of course, when you hit Pier Street and you hit places like that. Like, you know.
So Rat Salad, what was that like?
I hated it.
Was that the glory days? So what was the glory days?
Yeah, so the glory days come from all that. Like your ma wears army boots and she never goes to chapel. Like, that was a mate of mine that he moved from Talla when we were young. And so his nickname was just Talla. That's it. You're Talla. And that's what he used to say. You know, you're smoking hash and I'd be like, your ma wears army boots. You're like, that doesn't make sense. What the fuck does that mean?
It's just a line he had.
When you stoned out of heaven, we were lashing each other over with stick. This was just something my mate said. When you're back in your glory days, you don't appreciate how fucking magic they are until you look back through nostalgia and go, that was actually the best time of my life. That stuff that you're talking about, of being trapped in the past. I love going back there and fucking mining for a few lions and
we get that, because I think we say in fellowship, look back but don't stare. Like,
absolutely,
you know?
Yeah.
And I've no problem looking back, because when I go up to the gaff on a Sunday and I'm with my family, I arrive back in, I fit in to that jigsaw, right, to the family jigsaw, right? Yeah. So wherever part I play in that, whatever role I'm playing in the family, I just slap back into it. And times I have to mind myself, because I have to go, we're Sparky, you're not 15 now, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
You don't have to kick off here. You don't have to, whatever, you know what I mean? Sometimes I have to listen very, very, very intently. I have to just shut up and just listen. But when we're sitting there, a lot of the time we're reminiscing. Like when we had me dad on the podcast, it was savage, because I heard loads about him that I didn't know. And we need to know where we come from.
Yeah.
So Glory Days, is that off the album?
It's off the new album, yeah.
So you've got a new album.
This album is actually available for pre-orders now, so people can pre-order it, go onto iTunes or Spotify or wherever you get music, and they can pre-order it. And there's a few, I think there's four singles they'd be able to listen to, but you can preview the whole album.
So is this the first album, second album?
Second, this is the second one, yeah.
So this was written through COVID, was it?
Yeah, no, I had it. You see, what happened was I put the first one out in 2018, and then by coming to the end of 2019, I was like, I had like enough songs to make an album. And then the pandemic hit, which I hated, but it also was a blessing, because it gave me enough time where I just shut up shop. I didn't do fucking anything. I'd done a couple of things for Axis and Glore and, you know, theatres that were doing things for culture and all. I'd do it at home in my gaff. But because I didn't do anything for the first year, when I picked up the guitar again in 2021, songs were fucking just flowing. So I was so happy that I didn't put out that album. I would have been putting it out just to stay relevant and all that bollocks. A good chunk of these songs came from the pandemic, and this is one of them.
Rest your weary bones on my sofa, me old Segosha. We can sip tea from a scaldy mug and regale the tales of our yesteryears. Glorious ways we misspend our youth, smoking down back alleys, Bagsy on your apple. Your ma wears army boots and she never goes to chapel. I knew a crooked man once and he walked that crooked mile. making money out of misery. He wore a crooked smile in those glorious days of our squandering youth. We were running down back lanes, we were searching for truth in those glory days. Glory days, glory days, yeah. Ma says life is short, but the journey it is long. You better take it up that skin, son, if you wanna get along. And you better learn how to walk for you. Learn how to run, better learn how to be a man, son, you better learn how to love. When we were young, we'd all cycle our bikes out into the sun, and then we'd all play kiss chasing till we caught the right one. In those glorious days of our squandering youth, we were running down back lanes, we were searching for truth. In those glorious days where we misspent our youth, we were kissing down back lanes, we were searching for truth. In those glory days, glory days, yeah. Rest your weary bones, me old cigar share, sipping tea here with me on my comfy old sofa. Glory days, glory days, glory days, yeah. Glory days.
That's savage. I am living with the fairies up in Poppentry at the minute. I am away with the fairies. I lost my keys when I left, was leaving the house, and I went from, this is no joke, the attic, the ensuite, the bedroom, the duvet, the other bathroom, into the kitchen, into the sitting room, the dog's kennels, moved all them, sweat pumping out me. Dean's texting me saying, are you coming down to set up the show? Go, what? Where was the kids?
In your pocket.
Me pocket.
Yeah.
Me pocket, yeah. So the thing is, I reckon that's the little people acting the bollocks with me, you know, because that's the kind of shit they do. I live with the fairies. Dean has all that kind of episode numbers and all. What's it now, Dean?
This is episode 16.
Wow, episode 16. And yeah. 1916 was like,
it was like 100 odd years ago.
So I live in number 16.
And you're fucking
16 years away. Be
16 sheets to the wind. But you fuck off. I think that stuff where it's like,
senior moment.
Lean into it. Embrace it. That's the genius of getting a little bit
wisdom.
More senior.
Yeah, wisdom.
Fucking love it, man. Fall in love with that shit rather than be adverse to it.
No, I'm not averse. Like,
so what were you sweating for then? Just the physicality of going up
now? I was sweating because it was you. I was late. I hate being late now. See, when it was drinking, I didn't give a fuck about being late. I turned up 2 days late. It wouldn't bother me. I always remember somebody saying to me, I missed a flight. I was going to New York and I missed a flight. I was standing with this in a queue with a woman and her son, you know, and I said, I'm about to miss the flight. And she said, you couldn't do any worse than him. And I said, why? She said, did he miss? She said, not only did he miss it by a day, he missed it by 3 days. He missed the flight by 3 fucking, like he was away. It wasn't that he was going somewhere. Now, I've often booked flights for 5 o'clock in the morning, thinking it was 5 o'clock in the evening, and torn up at 5 in the evening. Like, oh, that went this morning, mate. I hate being late now. It's funny, in recovery, I hate being late. I want to be on time now. I want to be there. Even in work, I turn in, you know.
And do you have,
boss is listening to this now.
Do you have patience?
I'm working on patience, right? So that's a daily job, right? Mm. The daily job is tolerance, getting rid of resentments, trying to be patient, trying to be punctual, trying to fucking not spend loads of money on fucking radios and fucking matching. But it's a daily thing.
Patience. Last year and this year, I kind of got patience. Nearly lost two of my fingers one was from cycling, the other one was from surfing, and I was just rushing, and I wanted to be somewhere else rather than just be where the fuck I am. And life, as I'm learning, has just a lovely way of kicking the fucking bollocks out of you. But I'm learning to really appreciate all the stuff that happens to me, that the bollocks gets kicked out of me.
Yeah. Well, true, it comes growth, doesn't it?
But you kind of go, oh, poor me, for years and years and years. Like, I'm fucking 50 this year.
Yeah, I think that's a mindset, though, isn't it? Like, now, not that I'm the fucking Del Boy Llama floating around the gaff or anything. I would be prone to negativity as well, especially first thing in the morning. But I have that inbuilt thing that I try, on the broader scale of life, I try and take the positives out of it. Even when the shit's been kicked out of you. You know what I mean? Whereas that defines some people in life. Poor fucking me. Like, I can't get a bleeding break. And I think that shit stems from your, you know what I mean? Whatever your mindset is, if it's constantly attracted to the negative, well, that's what you're going to get in life. But if you can suss, for me anyway, this is just me, but if you suss that, like, right, bad shit is happening now, but I know through this, something good is going to come. So you're flipping it. I'm trying to always flip the negative to the positive. And then, I don't know, life seems to fucking take a different direction, you know?
This is my way of thinking about it. I come to a T-junction and I look left and I have a gaff. I have three dogs in the gaff. My man and dad's still alive. They're fucking happy out. My brothers and sisters are still there. I got on great with them. I've loads of mates. I'm fucking in recovery. I'm fucking doing great, right? I have a car. I go on holidays. And I look down there, right? And then I look right. And I start looking at all the negative shit, like, you know what I mean? And I'm like, I torn into the negative. And it's like what you're saying. I liked what you said, flip it. I'd love to be flipping that, to just turn left and just go into the, and I know, you know, there's gratitude and all that kind of stuff. Yeah. And I do try and do gratitude. Most days, you know, I do gratitude. I tend to do gratitude at night time. I don't know why I do that, but when I get up in the morning, I just try and not be in control. Let go of the steering wheel, because if I'm a hold of the steering wheel, that's
you're up and down the stairs, you're buying radios, you're fucking,
I tell you what's fucking negative. Killing myself with absolute fucking darkness. You know, just going into fucking dark spaces.
Yeah.
And that's the bad stuff, like, you know what I mean? And then regret and all that shit, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
You know, living in the past. And I'm absolutely, and I keep talking to him about it, right? I am absolutely mesmerised at how much Irish people live in the past, yeah. You know, and they're just constantly connecting. Wasn't it better then? Wasn't it better in the 80s? And it was better in the 90s? And we have this moment now to do this, like, you know what I mean? Like, and, but we're constantly, you know.
I remember.
So, Steo, what was the first music that made you go, holy fuck, that you wanted to sing along with? So for me, and I've said it before, was there, Pretty Woman Walking Down the Street, Pretty Woman by Roy Orbison. And I just the guitar riff. And then I was in my granny's gaff, and she was a big old gramophone, and I used to throw on records and even Rock Around the Clock. 1, 2, 3, you know, even when I'm thinking about it now, there's hairs lifting on the back.
Yeah,
really.
Yeah.
That did shift me, right? That did. But when I heard punk, when I heard The Clash,
wow,
when I heard The Smiths. But the other thing then that was always going on in the background was The Dubliners.
Yeah.
There was loads of shit. There was folk music going on. Like, we had Don McLean at home. We had The Dubliners. We had Perry Como, The Crooners. And I, in my youth, would always have compartmentalised them, that they were all different. But they're not. They're all the same.
Yeah.
So what would you say is, like, where did you kind of go, holy fuck, what's that?
So for me, like, because I grew up with my grandmother listening to, you know, country, like fucking Daniel O'Donnell was playing in Orgaff, but also Patsy Cline. No, I didn't relate to bleeding that, but Patsy Cline and fucking Dolly Parton and American folk and stuff as well, and Christy Moore. And so, there is a few of them. So, like, I remember me nanny was shopping for a new hi-fi system. In Crumlin, the Philip shop in Crumlin shopping centre, I think it was, yeah. And I was only a little kid. I probably shouldn't be saying this. I'm giving a bad account of myself now, but I was going along all the CD players, opening them all along the row. And I opened one of them and there was a Dire Straits CD in it. So I whipped it into me pocket.
Yeah.
I took it home and that blew me mind. I was just playing it on repeat. But I think the first artist that like just blew me whole world apart was in 1996 after Tupac got shot. And I was a proper hash smoker.
Yeah.
And I used to smoke with me mate who lived two doors down from me. He was like, yeah, wait till you hear this. He had a tape, cassette tape of Tupac. He's like, wait till you fucking hear this. We went in, we rolled two spliffs and he stuck on the bleeding tape. And it was Brenda's Got a Baby by Tupac Shakur. And I was just like, it's same as what you just described. Like, it was just so visceral and full of vivid imagery. And he just painted a picture in my mind with the music. And so that kind of like, and then what preceded that was like, I was listening to the Beatles with all that, because we were all stoners, Bob Marley, The Doors, just exploring different kind of Pink Floyd, anything that was a bit trippy and you could get bleeding stone to, we were listening to.
We brought up Tupac last week because we were talking about podcasts in working class areas are kind of giving people a voice.
Yeah, it's such an exciting bleeding genre. Like,
I think a couple of days before we recorded last week's podcast, the fella who was up for Tupac's murder was arrested. Tupac was the voice of that black working class ghetto in America. There was many voices that I was listening to at that time, Public Enemy and so on, but he was a voice that wasn't braggadocious. It was ordinary stuff.
Yeah.
And he done it so fucking so eloquently.
I think that's more so what he was. Like, he was a proper poet. But he came from that revolutionary mindset of like, Black Panthers and like that's where he was fucking born in jail. Like, that's where he was born, behind bars. Like, his ma had him when she was locked up. She was a member of the Black Panther Party. And so he was raised in that, even though she was fucking on crack and all that, he was raised in that military mindset of like, you need to educate your mind to free yourself from all of this fucking oppression. It's true education. That's how you're going to free it.
And before he done that, he was in Digital Underground.
Yeah.
And they were like, he was doing the Humpty Hump and all that type of stuff. And it was a bit gimmicky. But then he found his voice. That's what I was saying to you earlier on upstairs. When I listened to Glory Days this morning, I went, fuck, Steo has found his voice. He's in that stage. You know what I mean? And maybe that's one of the gifts that the head melt of COVID gave to you. It was just time to fucking...
Space, yeah. It actually did, because in the latter half of it then, I actually started enjoying it. Just as I was starting to enjoy it, it was like, it's all over now, you can go out. And I was like, for fuck's sake, I was just getting my head around it. Yeah, I probably should say as well that like the first time I heard Damo singing was the same as well, because I'd never heard anyone singing.
In a Dublin accent.
Yeah, apart from Lou Kelly and the boys, all the fucking legends, but someone singing in a Dublin accent.
About us.
About the Garda.
Yeah, right, that was the first song.
Right, that was the first song. That you picked the bad time, Garda. I was like, that's fucking, who was that like? It was just someone from, because like at that time, like that was at a time when the singer-songwriter genre in Ireland was very Nashville, Tennessee kind of, it was like a sea of people singing in kind of American twangs.
Yeah, yeah. Glenn was playing in Mudder Redcaps and we went up and Damo got up, right? And I could hear Morrissey in him. I could hear, "You're Not On Your Own Tonight." That was the song that he sang, "You're Not On Your Own Tonight." And then he sang Chilling by the... So that connected me then. And then he done Bad Time Garda. And I was like, this fella's played in sound, right? So Glenn did a gig for a friend of ours whose son had passed, right? He had passed from cancer. And he done a gig for him. So Glenn came and done that. So we met Damo after a gig. We went in to see him in Isaac Bo, and as he was walking out, we said, "Come here a minute, would you play a gig in Ballymore?" And he said, "I played in the Towers before," and he said, "Never again." And I said, "No, come up, we have this theatre, all this kind of stuff." And but what happened then was, we were telling him about the swimming, the sea swimming and all that we do with the kids and all that, right? And for some mad reason, he gave me his house number, right? And he said, "If you're going swimming, give me a ring." So about 3 days later, with a 14-seater minibus full of flayed mad yokes, right? And we knocked on his door. I rang him and said, "Look, I'm going if you want to come." And Franco was at the door looking out going, "Who's these blading heads? What's going on here?" Like, and he came out with us, me and Dino, and a big load of mad jokes. And we went down to Ballyskeddon and swam. And that's been the beginning of our friendship with him, like, you know?
Yeah.
But you're right. Every time he sings a new song, and sometimes, like, I went through a stage where I stopped listening to music, right? So I missed out on a load of Damo's music. Now, I knew the albums, and I remember my older sister, who wouldn't be a Damo fan, said to me, that song, Soul Son, is amazing. And I was like, I need to start listening to music again. I love your music. And I think you were compared to him a bit in the beginning, right? I heard your voice way before, like, you know, Dano said it was in that song. I heard you on a Facebook. I think I texted you about it. I heard you on a Facebook. It was probably during COVID and you'd done a gig.
Yeah. And that's what I was saying to Dane upstairs as well. It's like, it's a double-edged sword for me because I think as an emerging artist, you have to look around the bleeding, the scene and see. Well, for me anyway, I still do. I still go see people playing live and they might have a little bleeding thing that they do live and I'm like, I'm fucking taking that. I'm having that for me. Like, yeah. So I just take little bits of everybody that
isn't
I
that
like.
Isn't that what Bowie did? Isn't that what Bono does?
Yeah, I think that's what every artist has done. They've all been influenced by someone who went, wow, I'd like to give that a go. Yeah. And then you look around and you start doing little bits of whatever it is. And then after a certain amount of time, you find your own. But then the other side of that sword is that I think it's the industry that compares artists. And it's a thing that I don't really like. It puts people in boxes. You know what I mean? It's like, oh, he's the new Christy Dignam. That I tell you where it comes from. It's that fucking X Factor shit. It's like, oh no, you need to figure out who you are.
I watched an interview the other night and there was a guy talking to the Wolf Tones. Now, they were on stage and this guy is speaking to them like they're dogs from the audience. This guy, like, you know, and he's saying, you're what represents the dregs of society. And I'm like, man, what is going on with this? And the thing is that industry thing that you're talking about, or that kind of...
But there's a snobbery that goes on.
So like the snobbery, yeah. But there's a whole thing about traditional Irish music and Irish music and all that kind of stuff that happens every single day and every weekend in Ireland, right?
Yeah.
That's all happening without a fucking shilling passing. There's nothing going on. It's nothing to do. And it's like, when I'm watching TikTok, right, they're not only doing the trends. They're pulling out guitars and singing a song, and they're pulling out fiddles, and they're doing all ale and pipes.
It's leveled the playing field, yeah.
It's leveling it a bit, you know what I mean? And the thing is, there's not going to be another U2. There's not going to be another whatever, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
Unless, you know, because people don't really go out and buy CDs anymore. Like, I mean, years ago, I'm that old still. I used to go up to Abbey Discs up Northside Chapman Centre and flip through the albums, you know what I mean?
Deadly.
And it was a day out, and then I used to buy albums by the cover. I'd look at it and go, I bet you I like that, you know, and I'd love it. And I remember buying the Velvet Underground that had the banana on the front of it, and I used to see it and say, well, I wonder what that's about. And I just had money one day and there was nothing else there, and I bought it, right? But my thought about the Velvet Underground, and you're talking about robbing from others, or, you know, saying, always thought that they were, I remember seeing a film when I was a kid called Cabaret. Yeah, when Lisa Minnelli, is her mom was in, I think, or whatever, but, or maybe it was Lisa Minnelli that was in it, but I remember listening to the Velvet Underground and I could hear that cabaret thing, you know what I mean? I could hear that, and that's Kurt Vile and all these different people.
Yeah.
That kind of Berlin thing, you know, that happened in, you know, in Germany before Second World War, but... So I could hear that influence in the Velvet Underground, you know what I mean? And we're influenced by, like you even saying to me, also go, you know what I mean? Like, around here, we have certain ways of saying things, like, you know what I mean? And you go out to your place and we'd be saying something and it'd be like, what does that fucking mean? You know what I mean?
Yeah.
So we pick up loads of influences around us and musically, he recorded me last week singing, right? I don't listen to myself singing. And I actually had to listen to the podcast the other day because somebody asked me a question about it and they were looking for an answer. And I was thinking, what the fuck did I say? So I listened to it, right? And I was listening to myself singing and I actually enjoyed it.
When you were talking about TikTok, I was thinking that it democratizes music. And it's a level playing field, as you said.
Yeah.
When I went over to Edinburgh, it doesn't matter what you were doing here in the comedy clubs. As soon as you went over there, it was fair game. And That's a beautiful thing.
It is a beautiful thing, but I don't know. I remember being asked this fucking question when I first released the first album, like, how's it going? Like, how are you enjoying your career so far? Or something like that, you know, it was fucking Gavin Glass or something that asked me. And I remember answering it with a greenhorn perspective of like, it's fucking great. Like, everyone I've asked to work with me, demo, I'm fucking touring all over. Like, I haven't heard the word no so far.
It's great. Loving music. Music is really good. And then you get so far out on the ice where you're like, right, there's a bit of blading work to be done here. Like,
but isn't that the same with everything?
Like, it is the same with everything. I love that side of it insofar as like record labels not holding sway over any artist anymore. And anyone can make it just by uploading a video. But again, there's another side to that where it's like, you have to fucking tour little stinky shitholes and fall on your arse 700 times and get booed off stage and told you're fucking shy to taking yourself up. You know what I mean?
That's the good gear, I think.
That's what develops you as an artist.
Yeah, that's the good gear. Like, I'm always saying to people, get out and busk. Get out and fucking break strings on the street.
I've never busked a Damo. It terrifies the life out of me. I remember opening for Damo on Vicar Street.
You're lucky bastard.
Like, this is the mecca now. Damo's fans are like... they're mental. Like, they're fucking... Yeah. Like, it's the church. They're going to the church. Like,
yeah.
And there was some bollocks in the front row, you know, after like the first song or something. He's like, why don't you sing one of fucking Damo songs? I was like, yeah, fucking bastard shit.
So why wouldn't you busk?
I think it's a confidence thing. I think like when you're in a venue or, you know what I mean? Or you're with a few people.
There's a couple of safety nets.
There's definitely safety nets. And it's like this fucking little stage, and even though it's on the same level, there's a speaker between us. So this is this.
Yeah, I have a friend in recovery, right? And he thought he'd never go back to play music, you know? When he came into recovery, we came into fellowship and that, he thought he wouldn't be able to go back. But he's now, when he's on stage and he talks about it, I've heard him talking about it where he says, the stage is his. You know, that's my little safety spot, right?
The artist development side of music is probably not there anymore with the level playing field that is social media and fucking, and you know, the Spotify's and the iTunes. I wish fucking Gavin had asked me this question now, because like this is the only job I've ever had in my life where I have to pay to do it. You know what I mean? It costs me money to do my job. And every single person around me gets paid before I see any money. You know what I mean?
I told a story about I went to see a friend of ours in Oxygen, and at the end of the night, I seen him looking, staring at 50 quid in his hand, you know, and I was like, what's the story there, bro? And he goes,
that's my night's wages, yeah. And so that's what I think, like, I love it. That's what I love about the internet. Everything's level and good, bad, and the ugly, and everything is there, but it also devalues art, I think. Do you know what I mean? So like even if you look on, I don't know how many, there's a couple of 100,000 streams all in on Spotify's and Apple's and all of my music, right? And so if this was like the 1980s and they were radio players,
you'd have the gaff ball.
I'd have a house.
You'd be up in Dalkey.
I wouldn't be up in Dalkey. I'd be fucking down in County Clare. But you know what I mean? That's what I'm trying to say. It's like, and I feel like there's something in the air now where that's going to be leveled as well. I feel like there's something like where there's, you know, like the current business model of music is broken. It doesn't support young and emerging artists. It only supports top tier level. And Ireland's a fucker for young and emerging talent. Whereas like on the continent in Europe, it's like, there's music on tonight. We're going to the music. Don't care who's playing. We're going to go and see them.
That's right, yeah.
They support, doesn't matter. That's there's music, right, yeah. We're going to it. Whereas here, it's like, don't give a bollocks. If it's not Damo, Christie, or fucking Aslan, I'm not going.
But there is, you see, to a degree, right? So I get you, there is, because there's a couple of bands over in the U Club, and they were actually on social media last night, and they were talking about the next gig, right? And I'm hoping for one of them to say, let's do it ourselves. Let's run it in the U Club. Because I'm going to give them the U Club and say, run a gig here if you want to, and let them do it. You know what I mean? And I hope that they do. I think, right, so there's loads of opportunities for people to play music in Ireland, right, which like the corner of the pub and all that kind of stuff. There's loads of that, there's flas. But if you want to write your own songs, if you want to be Little Steel Wall from Bladen, what's it called, Rassala, there's really nowhere. There's no place where people go and listen and people. Yeah. And then
there needs to be more infrastructure. And look, come here, I'm sitting here like I'm fucking giving out. I have been steeped with luck since I started. It's rare that I've heard the word no since I started making music.
So can I ask you, Steve, and go a little bit deeper?
Yeah, go for it.
Where does that come from? Like, what's that happening spiritually, like, you know what I mean? Because I know what you're talking about, right? I know I have been very lucky in life. I've very rarely heard no, And I was like, I like the way you say that. You're like, I'm going to Australia in a couple of weeks' time. Right? I had a thought in my head during the summer about a friend of mine who was out in Australia, and there was another friend of ours out there. And I was like, I'm going to be there soon. And I'm gone in 4 weeks' time. Nice. Like, you know what I mean? And it's just, I'm very, very blessed. Yeah. I'm very looked after. You know what I mean? Yeah. So when that's happening for you, where would you say it's, where's it coming from?
I'm like what we spoke about earlier on in the podcast. Like, I'm deeply rooted to where, that's why the first album was called Where I'm From. And even though it was compared to whoever, it was a biographical of where I started out and where I am and where I'm from and where I came from. Cause I'm all about family and roots and connection. And especially like the Pavi side,
yeah,
where it's like steeped in stories and music. And so I feel it's not actually, I don't feel it anymore now. I actually now know it from the pandemic that like I have so many fucking ancestors that never found their voice or weren't represented. You know what I mean? So I feel like there's, not that I feel the weight of it, but I feel like I have a lot of family members that died through addiction, through whatever, through, you know what I mean, dying early or whatever. And so it's my job as an artist to kind of give them voice as well. And not that it's a burden or anything, but.
Do you think they're giving you something?
So what happened during the pandemic was, look, I went back on the smokes. I was going off my fucking head. And it was November 20, yeah? Like Tommy Tiernan was happening, Late Late Show was happening. I had the album ready to go, fucking two singles. That single that just got released, that was ready to rock. And I was saying, this is it, like, fucking 2023 is the year I'm going to fucking grab it by the scruff. I thought it was going to be my most successful year. And like my mental health was on the floor, like I was really struggling, you know. So I left Jesse and the boys and I fucking drove out to White Strand, just beside Spanish Point there in County Clare, and there's a cliff walk all out along the headlands. It's fucking mystical. This was a stormy fucking November afternoon, rain pissing, yeah. And I just walked out as far as I could go and I started wailing at these 20, 30-foot Atlantic waves going, rah, just primal fucking screams. And I think I was even on my knees bleeding in bits, like going, what the fuck? And I don't know if I'd watched fucking The Wolf of Wall Street or whatever. There was some, but anyway, this is what I heard in my head. Over the wind, I heard like a mad chant, tribal chant, like om, 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 om. I was on my knees, like crying, om, om, om. Getting louder in my head, like, you know, and I just felt like all me, so like my grandmother, my grandfather, like their fucking huge influence on me and who I am. And I just felt all them surrounding me, you know what I mean? Picking me up, like, you know what I mean? Saying like, you know, it's going to be all right. Like, you're going to be all right. Like, we have you. Like, and so at that time I was like, cause I'd heard, and I actually talked to Christy Moore about this on the podcast we done for Trad Fest. I'm not fucking plugging that and rapping, but you know what I mean?
Have a listen.
I'm actually a podcaster myself. So I haven't got past that difficult tournament. I heard the boys talking about like being a channel for music or words or melody or whatever it is, you know, it's things flow through you. And I kind of always knew that, you know what I mean? I knew that like this is something special is happening here, but particularly during that time, a knowing dropped down into me that like you're backed, like you have a fucking 1,000 years ahead behind you going, listen, get up there and represent, like, and so, like, I drove home, bleeding floods of tears, and I wrote a song called The Ancestors Call to give thanks for that, and trying, so it's on the new album, it's an a cappella, there's no music in it at all, it's just that chant, like, and all mad fucking tribal stuff, rain sticks and all going on in it. And so, yeah, I feel like there's a spiritual aspect
that I need to lean into. Like, I don't get me connection by going to mass and taking holy bread. And I have no problem with fucking JC or anyone that gets it from that buzz.
I had a connection with what you're talking about, right? I was when I went into recovery, you know, when I came into recovery, I've been in recovery for 25 years. Been in and out, hokey-cokey.
Yeah, I can relate, yeah.
And then a fella said to me, you know, the last verse of the hokey-cokey is put your whole self in. So that's what I did this time, but I actually surrendered. I came in willing. I came in willing this time, thank God, you know.
It's great being a baby in recovery.
Now, them first couple of months, right, I didn't know. And thanks be to God, I didn't know because I was high on just whatever was going on, right? And people were surrounding me and like,
off the breakdown, yeah.
And what happened to me was, this young lady said to me, let's go down and see Damo, you know? And I wasn't drinking. I didn't want to be drinking. And we went down anyhow, right? And I had had something happened to me during the week, like, you know what I mean? In terms of something, you know, that spiritual thing that you're talking about, right? But I couldn't understand it, you know? And I couldn't accept it. I couldn't connect with it. And I couldn't fucking whatever it was, right? But anyhow, we're in Newbridge, right? Now, the Damo gig, right, in Vicar Street is my hometown gig. So yeah. I'm okay in there, right? Yeah. Doesn't matter what condition I'm in, right? Yeah. I'm okay in there. I'm in the middle of that, right? And I've seen scraps, I've seen the whole thing, right? Yeah. But it's my hometown, yeah. So it's grand, right?
It's familiar.
So we went into Newbridge. And I've seen the Druids in Newbridge, right?
Yeah.
And I'm expecting, up the rah. And that's all I'm expecting. But they came out and done this show, right? That blew every single, it appealed to every single person. Yeah. And now I'm sure there was people turning up wanting to hear Sean Souten, Jerry, you know, from Gary Owen.
Yeah.
They got a bit of that. But there was young people there from 18 years of age. They danced, they jumped, they sang every single word of the song, right? And it was lovely. You know, I mean, the Druids were fucking dead. You love the Druids, right? But then Damo, right? So Damo comes out, him and the Barra, right? Out onto the stage, right? This thing just opened. Wherever he opened, like, you know, he came out and this thing just opened, right? And everybody went in, right? And he started. And in the middle of it, they're going, Damo, Damo, Damo. And it went on a little bit too long, right? And he just comes to the mic and he goes, it's not me. He says, I'm a conduit. And I went, now I get it. Now I get it. Yeah. Now I get it. And I walked out of there. The lad who was with me was saying, come on, we go backstage. And I said, there's nothing backstage. I said, what? What we need is
out here. Just gotten it. You can actually see it. I don't know. Like, I don't want to be disrespecting anyone, but like, you can see the people who channel that shit. There's a distinction between artists like that.
Yeah.
Some artists I go to, they've studied music all their life and they have all the theory and everything and they're vocally immaculately perfect. And for 10 minutes, I'm like, wow, this is fucking incredible. And then after 10 minutes, I'm like, I'm a little bit bored now because I'm waiting for a little fucking a note out of time or a fucking little cough of the throat or something.
Yeah.
And so like, there's certain artists that like just fucking give it, just leave everything and, well, like, there.
See, I grew up with the punk thing. Like I was in the 70s. I was listening to Puff the Magic Dragon, right? Then I hears, you know, Pretty Vacant by the Sex Pistols. Like, you know, I heard Anarchy in, you know, Anarchy in the, and I heard Alternative Ulster and I heard, and all this stuff was going on. And I heard U2. U2 were amazing. So I heard that, and that's the stuff that woke me up. And then you realise, like, I was playing guitar, right? I had this little red guitar at home and I started learning it, like, and I started learning chords, right? And then I start watching what was going on Top of the Pops and I'm like, he's playing an A and a D and an E. And that whole song is EAD, EAD, EAD. And it was the Skids or something, like, you know what I mean? Yeah. And I'm like, hold on a minute, I can do this. Now, I don't have what you have still to do the song thing. I don't have it, right? It's grand. I accepted it, right? I have another thing. They call me the Teenage Whisperer or something, like, because I can work with young people, right? I have this thing where I'm able to work with young people and I don't know how I do it. There's times I get it wrong. Rant. But I love working with, there's a team of people that I work with and like he's one of them as well. He's deadly at it as well.
Yeah.
But that's my gift. That's the gift that I was given and I just went with it.
Do you think that stormy night was access to that.
Yeah, it was me first. That was me first. Like that, you know, the two of you saying, oh, Steve has found his voice. That was the first time in my life where things drop. You know, when everything drops down and a knowing happens. I've got it with drugs sometimes, you know what I mean? Where you're like, wow, I know some shit. But this was it in its purest form. You know what I mean? Where you just, you know. And it's like that thing, it's like, I think that's the fucking secret of life. Is to find out what you're good at.
And lean into it.
And lean into it for all it's worth. I don't know, like, yeah, that's, for me, that's where that's pure bliss, like, you know? You know, finding your gift, finding out what you're good at, and then trying to help other people through it.
Yeah.
And then if by some miracle you manage to be able to earn a living out of it, that's it. Like that's the gold. Like,
my mates were at a band in London last week, and the band, they're a new band, put out their own music, and they've no record deal, and they filled out some huge big stadium, you know, in England. And I'm thinking, this is where it's going. And it's going to take the record industry out of all this, right?
Yeah.
They're not going to have, you know, like, I was reading on Facebook yesterday, there's some Jamaican guy who's taken on the record companies. He's like 40 years fighting them because when he was a reggae recording star in Jamaica, they just, you know, they said, there's a bit of shiny paper and we'll take your songs, you know? And he's saying to them, I want my money. I want what's owed to me, you know? Yeah. And I think they're gone. I think all those people, and I think they're struggling. Everything moves still. You know what I mean? So like you're saying, if it had been the 80s, I would have been living in the gaff. It's not the fucking 80s, 2023. And not deal with it, but just, it is what it is. Like, you know, and let's get on with it. Like, but the thing is, lean into what's happening. Like, lean into the TikTok, lean into the stuff. If it's,
I think I'm still caught back in the 80s with all that. Like, I can do the fucking Facebook thing and the email. That's my limit. Like, people are born into that.
Yeah, that's
so
it.
Just, it's second nature to them now to do this. But I think in relation to all of that, brilliant. For whoever goes viral and whoever knows how to use all these platforms to the best of their abilities, I wish them I would never begrudge anyone getting on in life in any area.
Yeah.
Whatever you're, like I said, whatever you're good at, lean into it and fucking get paid from it if you can. Yeah. But I also think that, for me, there's a slow and steady. It's just, I don't want to be viral. I don't want to be fucking, I just want to do what I do and slowly from the ground up build something.
Well, here I tell you, one of our mates is doing well from the TikTok thing, and I watched it last night. Willie White is doing well. What's happened is,
see, he's selling out shows and.
He sold out the Liberty Hall the other day, right? And all his laughter lounges are selling out, which is great. The young people are taking his segments out of talking bollocks and throwing them up on TikTok. Every 7 or 8 videos that's on TikTok, it's him. He's getting the attention. Fair play to the talking bollocks lads. You know, for bringing, because that's what you were saying earlier about the podcasting thing. It has given us as working class people a voice.
That's what I was saying. It's such an exciting medium because it's so new. And you can see like radio and fucking news and how people consume information. It's like, it's changing every day. And this is like the wild, wild west.
Yeah. And you don't have to know how to do it. I think what you have to do is focus on letting the stuff channel through you.
Yeah.
And write the songs.
That's my job.
And sing them and continue to find your voice.
And yeah, for sure. And that's like I said, like the about paying to do my job, like, I love it so much that I'll continue with the paper, like, you know what I mean?
Yeah, and it will be a slow burn, and I think that you're, as you're saying, you're leaning into that, and you get opportunities along the way. You haven't been told that no that much. You're doing a big show for Ireland in the RDS.
Yeah, Ireland 100 is what it's called, old song, re-sung. And so it's just, I don't know, I'd say it was probably 30 plus acts. Dame was at it, and Dermot Kennedy and Denise Child, and it's going to be fucking like that's what I'm saying. Like, so every time that, you know what I mean, you're having a down slump, especially this year is, for me, it's like, I'm not sure. it's touch and go as to whether Steo is going to fucking continue on this path. And then you get little calls like this, just some lady messaging you on Instagram going, we're doing this thing, would you love to come?
Are you getting paid?
Of course I'm getting fucking paid. I'm not doing
it's
it.
Not of course, honestly, because I got you to do a gig at the start of the year. I didn't pay you.
Yeah, but so for me, like that's, you box off like...
A certain couple of things a year.
Yeah, a certain couple of things a year that you're passionate about and that you're like, right.
So in, I think it was in February, I gave you a show and a few other people a show to stand on a stage with me, Bernadette Devlin and Christy Moore and a few other people just to say, no, we're not really into this racism and fascism thing. You gave us a belter of your song, More Blacks, More Dogs, More Irish.
That wasn't it something else, right, that you had like in Ballymun, you had a couple of people here protesting, like up at the East Wall, you had a couple of people protesting. Over in Crumlin, a couple of people protesting, right? And then 35,000 people arrive out in the street. And it must have said to the fash at the far right, well, waste that fucking time here? Because like, I think the one thing that got me was Bernadette Devlin, right? And I've always supported her, I've always listened to her stuff. Her politics wouldn't be, you know, it doesn't jigsaw directly into mine, but there's definitely leanings there, like, you know what I mean? But I thought, if we had to box that off, what she said that day, and just kept pumping her out on a radio station or something, it was savage what she said. You couldn't fix it. You couldn't add any more words to her, take any words away.
But she's very calculated, isn't she, Luke?
But she was amazing. Yeah. You know, she was just amazing.
Yeah, it's a strange old time, isn't it?
Yeah, but the music helps, Steve, so keep on doing it. And when you feel like dropping out, give us a shout and I'll encourage you to keep on doing it.
Yeah, no, I think... I'm so far out on the ice now. I can't see land anymore. So
yeah, we are past the point of no return.
Yeah,
this is what you do.
Yeah, this is who I am, and that's what it is. It's like this, like I call it a job, but it's actually not. It's a fucking way of life. It's who you are. Because what happens to me is, if I'm being creative, and then I'm not expressing my creativity to you, what happens then if I don't express it is, I turn it in on myself and it becomes that negative thing. I lean it into, you know what I mean? It becomes negative and self-destructive. Whereas if I'm expressing the creativity.
Yeah, your way of finding the positive is to give it back out.
Yeah, absolutely. That's what it is. It's just, it's healing and it's fucking making peace with the past and trying to make sense of what goes on in my head and what's going on in the world. And whether anyone relates to it or not is a bonus. You know what I mean? Because for me, it's like once, particularly with that song that fucking blew up a little bit at the start of the year or last year or whatever, once I put a song out into the world, nine times out of 10 been the fucking exception to the rule. I don't give a shit what people think about it. It doesn't belong to me anymore. It's yours. And how you perceive it and what it brings up for you is on you. Can't get too involved in what you think of me, because there's two sides to that coin of you going fucking brilliant, best thing I've ever heard, best thing since sliced bread, and then me getting pumped up, my ego going I'm fucking lethal, and then he's going that's shy, you're a fucking traitor to the country, and then I'm going I'm shy, I'll never fucking write again. So you can't get caught up.
And where did the More Blacks, More Dogs, More Irish come from?
Oh, you had that chorus, they're like, no blacks, no dogs, no Irish. It wasn't that long. Well, I had that chant for fucking ages. And then Christy's niece lives down by us. She was working with a few direct provision heads. We all got to know. We have coffee mornings and sing songs. And
I heard about it.
I had videos of all the boys fresh, you know what I mean? Fresh in fucking Milltown, Malibu. Singing, what's wrong with the world, man? What's wrong with the world? I was like, this is fucking deadly.
Yeah.
The center that they were living in, I saw videos of it. So like in the winter, like the rain was like a fucking waterfall coming down the walls, yeah? And like black mold spores everywhere. And then, because you know the way, like some of the boys are Muslim and all that. So you'd have certain dietary needs that you know, when you're a Muslim. None of that was like, get that fucking chicken and rice into you or whatever. And so she was just kind of herself and Rory McKernan and a few other good heads were advocating on behalf of the lads.
He knows Rory.
Yeah, Rory's fucking, I love Rory. That prompted me to sit down and then write the song, yeah. And so that's what happened, like in the pretty green Isle of Erin. So, but then after the first verse, I was like, this is actually all right. I might just calm down and try and finish it off, you know.
I watched the Bob Dylan interview from 92 or something like that. Dylan through the '60s, like, you know, he was tormented by people asking him questions, you know, and he'd be sitting there going, I'm a song and dance man. He just couldn't get like why they were so obsessed with him, like, you know.
He never thought he was political.
He never thought anything. He never thought he was anything. He just thought it was like he was just riding on the crest of a wave. And so anyhow, in the '90s then, he sat into it, right? And he was at an interview. This guy's saying to him, you know, blood on the tracks, blah, 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 blah. And he goes, what do you think it is? And your man goes, well, I was splitting up with my wife that time and this happened. And then I heard that line and he goes, that's exactly what it is. Right? That's what he said. But your man was like, and then this other woman goes, yeah, but I thought that line meant. Did it? And he goes, that's exactly what it is. Yeah. And he said, what you said, it's not my song. He says, what you're getting from it is what you're getting from it. What he gets from it is what he gets from it. And what I get from it is what I get from it. It's like Springsteen came out with Born in the USA and Ronald Reagan wanted to use it for a campaign thing. Yeah. And he's like, no, you're not using it, right? That's not what the song's about. The song's about blah, blah, blah. But I always thought the song was Born in the USA.
Yeah.
But it wasn't. You know, I was saying today about starting to listen to songs again, right? I'm starting to listen to the Smiths now, right? You know, I'm starting to hear the Smiths and I'm going, that's what he was singing about there. Yeah. Like, you know what I mean? You're thinking, how did a 21-year-old John Flynn Morrissey write them songs? Like, yeah. You know what I mean? And then you're thinking, Damo wrote You're Not On Your Own Tonight when he was 16. Like, you know what I mean? You're thinking, there has to be some gathering of that thing you're talking about, your ancestors. And even saying that, and, you know, we kind of cringe at it going, fucking hell.
Same.
But it's there.
Yeah.
It is there. I know it's there because I've witnessed it. You know what I mean? I've witnessed it with myself. I've been in sticky situations and I was minded. I've looked for things, you know what I mean, saying Jesus, and then they would get it. It would come and it's like, no, that's not saying it's on tap. It's not on tap. I don't switch it on or I don't switch it off. But if I lean into it, as Dean says, it's great. You know what I mean? And
I feel like I'm mad when I'm telling this. I haven't told that story to too many people.
I could see you when you were doing it. You were mooching around the chair. You were checking your shoulders and all
it
this.
Because it feels insane. Like, to say what I've said feels insane.
And I'd say most people have had those experiences, right? But they don't want to talk about them.
Yeah. And so, but here's the thing, right? So after it all opened up and I was playing a festival in Galway called Mishlore, which is Traveller Cant for Moving. Traveller Festival. This was a nomadic tribal festival. So there was tribes from the Four Corners and a whole lot of pavies in the city of tribes in fucking, as part of the festival, you know, we were introduced and I was on this panel and we were doing a bit of talking, me and a few other travellers and Sami tribal people. Sami are tribal peoples from the Arctic tundra up in like Norway and Sweden. They're in a battle with Norway because Norway are trying to fucking wipe their way of life out. And Romani gypsies, pavies from Donegal, all over. So we're all sitting there and I chose to sing that song as part of me opening thing. Well, I said, I'm going to sing Ancestors Call. It's first time singing it. First time singing it live, yeah? So I sang it and it's all like, there's loads of fucking tribal shit going on and I don't know where it came from. But one of the guys, two of the Sami tribal people, Axel is his name, yeah? Like the nicest bloke you ever met. Like he was my brother. We were brothers. For the weekend, we became brothers. And so I sang the song and he was sitting beside me and as I was walking back down the row of panel people, I could see he was welled up and kind of crying a bit. And I was like, you know, laying there, I was like, what's wrong, man? And he said, that song, my grandfather just passed. And so every year they heard, is it elk or, you know, some form of deer?
Caribou.
Caribou. They heard caribou. And so I'm going to get this wrong now, but in the winter time, yeah, they push them up into the mountains where they can still graze. And then in the summertime, they're down onto the tundra. So that's his livelihood, yeah. And he's one of the top producers over there as well, music producers. And he said, so every year we herd the elk down into the tundra and in January we have a celebration. So all the tribes come together and we have a celebration. But that chant that you just done, like that was my grandfather's party piece. Very, very similar, like the and probably a bit more, you know, the dialect of music probably changes when you go over there, but he said it was very, very similar, and I swear to God, I got goosebumps from my head to my toe going, there you go. Like, it's no coincidence that a tribe on the other top end of the planet is doing something that came to me in a moment of fucking madness. There's no coincidence.
I don't call that madness.
And then if you get deeper into that, then I was listening to Blind Boy, and he's on this fucking mythology buzz at the minute, which I fucking love. And so all the ancient mythology of the world, like some of it, the space between them. So like he had a guy on called Modcon. Do you know Modcon?
We had Mancon on here.
Mancon. I never pronounced the man's name. Mancon. It was one of the most fascinating. Like, I dropped the lads off of school and I sat outside the school for an hour and a half just going, this is incredible. And that song, particularly Ancestors Call, I wanted to get to that chap, Mancon. I was like, you need to hear this song. This is.
I'll send it to him.
Send it to him. And so what he was, so what he,
feeling the energy, man.
So what he was talking about was like the native peoples of Australia, like the Maori peoples and all of these tribal peoples. He was traveling through the lands. I don't know if he's heard it anyway, but the mythology of it is 40, 50,000 years old. They're the oldest living fucking native peoples on the planet, right? And then 15,000 years ago, a load of mad Celts in the middle of fucking Ireland are talking about the same mythology. We have the same beliefs, the same core values. It's all based around nature and staying in line with nature and being at one with nature. But they're fucking 40, 50,000 years apart. And at a time where there was no people going out on fucking boats and traveling across the seas.
No, like, TikTok then.
There was no, so there's a collective thing going on that I think.
A collective consciousness
that you can tap into, you know what I mean? And again, like, I'm shuffling around and I feel like a mental patient saying that, but I actually know it's true.
Yeah, well, look, you're with your brothers, so we're as mental and as in tune and as connected and as conscious and unconscious as you can get.
Yeah.
You're with your brothers here.
Yeah, yeah. But do you know what I mean? Like, there has to be something outside of the 3D buzz that we're all on here now. Do you get what I'm saying?
I love it.
But there is, though. There has to be.
Yeah, and the sonic and the heart and that, they're the keys into it.
Here's a question for you. When you hear a piece of music, so say you hear the tune from back in the day, like Puff the Magic Dragon or fucking whatever your buzz is musically, do you travel through time space and be back where you are?
So when I hear Puff the Magic Dragon, I'm in a caravan in Rush.
Right. Do you get that?
All the time, every day.
Do you hear something that's going to blow? I didn't know this. I'm 41 years of age and I didn't know this. I thought that every single human being on the planet that hears a song from their youth is automatically transported back there. But they're not. There's certain people. I have a friend at home, Maeve. She's just the most amazing human being on the planet. And we were talking about the her and Jesse were out having a few drinks one night, and I'm the bleeding designated driver, so I was dropping Maeve home. And we were talking about this thing. What's it called? It's a thing that used to be on the radio where you talk about your musical tastes. She was doing it with her old man.
Desert Island Discs.
That's it. She was doing that with her old man, and he was telling her about her musical taste, and she found it fucking fascinating. She recorded it and the whole lot. And so I was like, oh yeah, I remember that song. It makes me think of this. And she was like, do you get that? And she was like, no, I don't get that. Music doesn't do that for me. So not everybody has.
Not
that.
Everyone gets it. Not everyone's open to it. We're not all aware of it.
Yeah.
You're open to it now. And part of that thunderous night on the cliffs is that opening as well. Yeah. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
You're leaning into it and you're facing in that direction. And one of the things that your music does is help other people face in that direction.
Yeah. If they're that way inclined, because what you're talking about, that woman, I was talking to a mate of mine recently, he doesn't like music.
Yeah.
Has never connected with music, has never had any.
That's another thing that blew me mind though, Sparky, was that I thought when I start making music, every single person on the planet was going to love my music. It's fucking great. I love it. I love this song. I've recorded this song. I'm really happy with it. I've gotten it to a place where I'm putting it out into the world. So you need to love it too. And I very quickly learned that music is so subjective.
Yeah.
That you might think it's shy.
I know people, I've had been playing Damo's music for years, and then people would say to me, I never liked his music, you know, and I'm like, what?
How I don't know with the hip hop. I ran a hip hop label for 20 years, and most people I know went, that was shy. But I loved it. It opened something in me. It connected with me. And as you said, once you make it and you put it out there, you kind of have to let it go.
You have to let it go.
Otherwise, it'll kill you inside. Your ego will go, oh, but I'm amazing.
It's all about ego.
Yeah.
I think it's all about keeping the ego in check. And that's what, for me, part of that knowing is that when you're writing or when you're inspired to write, and that channel that you talked about opens up. And like a song like Glory Days, that was written in less than 12 hours. Like, it just spilled down me. I couldn't stop going back to the guitar just to finish it. And every time I went back, boom, it just opened and it was flowing. But what happens to me 9 times out of 10 is that there's, cause that's what happens. There's a channel and you, like all the boys, like the Damos and all the boys that know, you just let it flow. Yeah. But what happens to me 9 times out of 10 is like, I'm writing it. I'm in the middle of writing and I'm going, this is fucking brilliant. I am amazing. And then instantly it goes, boom, closed. You're done. That's all you're getting.
So the music is out there in the universe.
It's just, you're just catching it.
And you're the channel into this 3D space.
Yonder.
And then your ego comes in going,
I'm amazing.
In this 3D space, I'm the dog's bollocks.
Look at what I'm doing. Gone. That's it. And that's like I was saying to Christy as well, I have about 999 fucking one versers that have never been finished because my ego kicked in. And Tommy, I was amazing.
We're all amazing. Right? We're all amazing.
Yeah.
Not just you. All of us. We're all shit. And we're all amazing at exactly the same time. Yeah. In here, in this 3D ego fucking space that we're in. And out there, we're all one. We're all something else. We're all part of the energy, part of the music.
Yeah.
And all you're doing is letting some of that in. And it can get overwhelming and you can think it's you. It's not. And that's all right. Can we hear the ancestors?
When the great and wise old chieftain lay down and closed his eyes, and we gathered around in a circle, the rain had poured from the skies, the rain had fell down, the rain had fell down, the rain fell down upon our brow, the rain had fell down, the rain had fell down. The rain fell down and cleansed our brow. When we damage and pillage the mother, we only reap what we sow. Oh, we must learn to love one another. Brothers and sisters, it's all that I know. Love, it is free. Love, it is free. Love, it is free for you and me. Love, it is free. Love, it is free. Love, it is free for you and me. The ancestors call. The ancestors call. The ancestors call out to me. The ancestors call. The ancestors call. The ancestors call out to me. When the great and wise old spirit lay down and dreamt up this land, and she whispered this song to the birds in the trees, and the birds they sang it for man. Then we were free, then we were free, then we were free to be what we'll be. Oh, then we were free, then we were free. Then we were free to be what we'll be. The ancestors call, The ancestors call, the ancestors call out to me. The ancestors call out to me. They call out to me. The ancestors call out to me. They call out to me.
The Ancestors Call, Steel Wall, Episode 16, The Fresh Batch Podcast. Brother, you're home.
Thanks for having me.
You're amongst your own, Steel. Savage Podcast. Thanks.
I will use this opportunity to say, Free Palestine! Woo! I will use this platform to say that every human being who suffered at the hands of the fascism of the 30s and 40s would turn in their graves at the apartheid state of Israel on the hell-bent road to full-blown fascism against human beings. I would say to people here in this country who say we have no room on this island for any more refugees, before the Gotham War, before the genocide imposed on the people of this country by imperialism, the mother of capitalism, there were almost 8.5 million people on this island. And we didn't have multi-story flats. We are 2 million people short of an 1845 population. There's plenty of room for 2 million more. Our problem is not that we have no room. It's that we have a crisis of humanity, a crisis of capitalism, a crisis of greed, prejudice, and ignorance that needs sorting. Which side are we on? Are you on the side of humanity, decency, equal rights, or are you on the road to fascism? If you are not on the side of equality and rights for every human being, there is no other end to the road you are on than fascism. And we have seen where fascism takes us.
Ireland!
Fuck off, will you? Fresh, yeah?